linoleum knife. Actual linoleum knives.
Uh-huh.
A real linoleum knife.
Yeah.
That will kill you. Did we talk about how somebody sent us one?
No, we didn't, actually.
We were... Oops.
What are you breaking now?
Are the levels right?
Yeah.
You got me at a good level. I'm not. I don't sound far away.
No.
You don't sound...
No.
Somebody sent us an actual linoleum knife.
Yes, our friend Patrick.
Patrick. Thank you, Patrick.
It's part of a very random care package.
It was a very nice care package.
No, it was...
There was tree fungus.
Yes.
In that care package. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. But you're supposed to boil it down and make a poultice.
A salve.
I think. And then apparently it's good for my inflammation.
Where are you inflamed?
A lot of places, we all are inflamed, apparently. Everybody has all this inflammation. I've been hearing about this on the television.
Really?
Yeah. We've all got inflammation. And sugar and all the things it's like the cavity creeps. They go around eating the sugar and make you have inflammation. Then you get cancer and you die.
Are you watching Dr. Phil again?
The fungus.
Or Dr. Oz. Is that what this is?
Dr. Oz has a lot of interesting things to say.
About your poop.
Your brother knows Dr. Oz.
Well, they were...
He's a for real doctor, too.
They were classmates.
Yes.
They're not tight.
They know each other, though. They would give each other the fist bump if they saw each other,
sure. The secret med school handshake.
Yeah. So anyway, he sent us the fungus.
Yes.
It's a Chago? Shago? Something like that.
You looked it up. I don't know.
It's some hippie thing.
there were also...
It's sitting here on the counter, and I'm like, I'm going to figure out what to do with it.
There were mustards in there.
There was some great... There was a jar of mustard, a nice, expensive jar of mustard.
And mix CDs.
Yeah. Very grateful.
So thank you for the stuff.
I'm going to take a picture of holding the linoleum knife.
And we'll put it on the page.
We're going to put it on our page.
Put it on our Facebook page if you've not already liked us on Facebook, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which this is what you're listening to, by the way, the Linoleum Knife Podcast
about movies.
Yes.
And
opinions thereof.
Yeah. And you're Alonzo Duralde. You are the film critic of therap.com, TheWrap, like wrap up a gift and send it to us in the mail.
And you are Dave White of movies.com.
Yes. You're also on What the Flick.
Yes.
People can look at you talking about movies on What the Flick with Christy Lemire and Matt Atchity and Ben Mankiewicz.
Yes.
And then they can go on underneath the video of you and leave you mean comments. Because it's on YouTube.
And many do, as it turns out, but I don't read them.
Those are people who are not nice. We like nice people. We're nice.
We get very nice letters.
I'm super nice.
From our listeners. So our listeners are swell folks.
Yeah, the people who actually email us
are
very nice.
Yes.
We don't have any YouTube commenters.
It's because we're not on YouTube.
Because we're not on YouTube. We ain't never going to be on YouTube. I'm not doing it.
No, thank you.
I've had yet... another person tell me, oh, you should do a video, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. No. No, I'm not.
Everyone's too awful.
Yeah, it's, I like being here.
Yes.
In my house. recording this thing, having a nice drink.
A cool drink today.
It's a cool drink today. No tea today.
It is still unbearably hot here.
I know you all want to know what kind of tea I'm drinking all the time. But today it's ice water because it's very... No gulping noises on the television.
I was not gulping.
I heard it.
No, you watched me.
Hear the gulping.
Your brain added the sound.
I hear the gulping. Don't do that.
I did not make sound. I was away from the microphone and I was being very quiet.
Listeners, if you hear him making gulping noises... Offensive gulping noises.
I was taking discreet little sips, but you were watching me do it, and your Neanderthal walnut brain added the sound to go with the image.
So, oh God, blank air. I just, my head just went Everything evaporated. That's how hot it is.
Yeah.
It's sapping my will to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's October. Well, tomorrow's October.
Tomorrow's first. October.
But it should not be like this right now.
No, no. It's one of the
should not be.
I literally had to remind.
Gnarly hot outside.
I had to remind myself today. I'm not depressed. I'm just hot. That's all that is, because it does sap your will to live. It's a terrible thing.
Everything about like optimism and
ambition,
and hope for the future.
Effort.
It evaporates. Like there's nothing. There's nothing that happens good.
No.
In this hot weather.
No.
I actually just took a cool shower just to cool myself down.
And how do you feel now?
Hot.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I'm also very hot to talk about Lupa. Do you see what I did? That was a segue.
Before we get to Lupa, I wanted to talk about our field trip yesterday.
Well, let's talk about Lupa. We'll talk about our field trip after.
All right.
People are very excited about Lupa this weekend.
I guess. To me, that the title always makes me think of Big Bird, you know, because
that's what it does. It was the same thing. This Mr. earlier this week. I was like, Mr. Looper, and he'd go, Hoopa, Hoopa. Explain that for the millions of people who millions of people aren't listening, but
all right,
for the people
for
who
the youngsters
don't,
out
yeah,
there,
yeah,
all right. Originally on Sesame Street, there was a storekeeper named Mr. Hooper, and he was a somewhat cantankerous but mostly kindly old gentleman. And he and Big Bird were very good friends, but Big Bird could never ever get his name right, and he always called him Mr. Looper, Mr. Cooper, you know. And the guy was always like, "No, it's Hooper, it's Hooper." And then he died, and then they made the rather bold choice, rather than replace him with, you know, another Darren or another, who's the daughter on Roseanne?
Becky.
Another Becky. They basically, Mr. Hooper died, and they talked about it, and they had to tell Big Bird that Mr. Hooper died and explain death to him, and they basically used it as a teachable moment for kids to talk about death, and it was kind of a watershed in children's television.
And Big Bird said, "Poor Mr. Looper, he's dead."
Did he? I don't know.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, so whenever I see the title Looper, I think about Big Bird.
What else do you think about Looper?
God, I think that
get it out of the way so I can talk to the real people.
Yeah,
you're done.
I think it sucks to have a dissenting opinion these days.
It does,
because everybody just wants to line up and tell you how. Oh no, you're wrong.
Oh no, you're wrong.
And I'm sorry. I went into to Hooper. Hooper. I went into. No, I'm doing that.
That's the Burr Reynolds movie.
It is, which I would have rather seen, I think. No, I went into Looper with fairly high expectations. It was getting really, you know, people were talking about it at the festivals.
Oh, no, you're wrong. I'm just practicing.
Thank you. And it starts really strongly. The story is that the premise of the film is that it's set in the near future in your typical sort of grimy dystopian city, you know. Not but like
AKA
the one in
all cities.
Yeah, like the one in Dread without the giant tall buildings, and in the future of that future, like 30 years later, they have invented time travel, but then they've immediately banned it, and the only people using it are organized crime.
You would think they would have invented time travel in a time when it was a non dystopia, like maybe the bold atomic 50s or whatever, like when people were happy and optimistic.
And of course, once you start going down this wormhole, it's kind of like, well, then why not just set the movie in the present? Because if the future has time travel, then they would have changed in the thing and the whatnot. Anyway, so in the future's future, they've invented time travel. They stopped using it. And then mobsters are using it basically as a way to eliminate people quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's apparently in the future, it's hard to like hide bodies or whatever. So they send them back 30 years, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and all the other stop doing it.
You better knock that off.
And all the other loopers.
Yes.
Shoot them in the head and dispose of the bodies in the past so they'll never be found. And then eventually what happens to all loopers is that they themselves get sent back 30 years to be killed by their younger self. That's called closing the loop.
Yes.
And when that happens, you get a big fat payday, and you basically sort of sit around for 30 years waiting to get sent back in time.
You can choose to close your own loop, too.
Is that a thing?
You choose to cash out. You can do that.
I thought you had to do it.
No, I was under the impression that it was also a choice.
No, you have
could make.
No, you have to do it.
Because did I miss that part?
You may have.
That's which
nullifies your opinions.
Whatever.
Anyway,
it's a fine detail.
So,
it's not.
So they send future Joseph Gordon-Levitt back for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to kill, and it's Bruce Willis. But Bruce Willis is not going down like that, and so he runs and eludes Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt has seen firsthand what they do to loopers who fail to close the loop. They basically start cutting pieces of you off so that your future self also starts missing pieces of himself, and it's an ugly thing. So, JGL is trying to kill Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is trying to change the past so that he doesn't get killed and sent backwards in the future. And it all comes crashing down at a farm run by
Emily Blunt,
who is the least convincing farm living person ever in a movie. No, that's a secondary thing, but it just
another fine detail that doesn't really have much to do with.
Here's the there are two big details that kept me from joining all of you slack-mouthed herd and loving this movie. No, I'm kidding. I don't. If you love the movie, great, love the movie, whatever. But here's the reasons I didn't. One, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's crazy-ass makeup.
I like it.
They rather than let us make the leap that Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 30 years might look like Bruce Willis, which is not the craziest thing in the world. It's not like expecting that Dakota Fanning is going to turn into James Earl Jones, you know. I think, that's a leap that we could have made, you know, maybe do some things with his, like, you know, he does a performance that's Bruce Willis-y. Like, he changes the cadences of his speech and stuff. And so that's all fine.
I love the scene in the diner when they're just staring at each other.
Yeah.
It's like, how much actual staring contest went on as preparation for this, you know, as you know, for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to sort of get the Bruce Willis rhythms down.
Sure.
You know,
I like to think that, you know, maybe he watched Blind Date over and over again. So anyway, but what they have done is they have made up Bruce or Joseph Gordon-Levitt to look more Bruce Willis-y, which is a big mistake for two reasons. One, he doesn't look like young Bruce Willis. We know what Bruce Willis looked like 30 years ago. He was the guy on Moonlighting. Two, what he does look like is the love child of, as I said in my review, Kirk Cameron and Robert Forster. The other problem is that the whole movie, I was looking at him going, there's Joseph Gordon-Levitt with crazy makeup on his face. Like, there was never that moment where, you know, again, as I said in my review, where you go from, look, there's Nicole Kidman with a funny nose, to, oh, look, that's Virginia Woolf. Like, there's a point in a performance like this where you're supposed to sort of transcend the trappings and just buy the character as this other person. Usually it happens when the person is playing, like, another celebrity or something, you know, where Meryl Streep just becomes Margaret Thatcher and you stop noticing all the prosthetics. I never stopped thinking of him as Joseph Gordon-Levitt wearing crazy prosthetics to look like young Bruce Willis, which he does not. So that distracted me for the entire film. Second of all, once they have established this plot, which is a kind of a cool one, I mean, you know, any time travel story inevitably opens itself up to time travel paradoxes, and this one's no exception. You know, the whole thing at the beginning where they explain what the loopers do and how it works and who runs the city and, you know, the mobster guy played by Jeff Daniels, who you would expect to play a mobster, like, all that was interesting and really cool. And then once they get to the farm, by the time they get into that, it was just like, I stopped caring. And I felt like the pacing got really laggard, and there's a lot of it got very, you know, you can feel it in your butt when a movie is just, you know, not, like, keeping up to some sort of pace. Even a slow movie. I'm not saying that, like, you know, my problem with, you know, I wanted Uncle Boonmi to have more, you know, car chases in it. I mean, there are movies that have a sort of interior clock and you go with them. But you can also tell when a movie is kind of flailing about. And for me, Looper felt like it was flailing about. I lost interest. I got bored with it. I wanted them to get on with the plot. And I don't know. I just, for me, it didn't work. I think it, you know, I didn't see Brick, which I know a lot of people love. Rian Johnson, same writer-director of this film. I did see his second film, The Brothers Bloom, which I think has a lot of the same problems as this movie. Very stylish, very interestingly acted, and there's kind of a cool premise, and he's put a lot of look and a lot of thought into the look of things and, you know, whatever, but then there's just not a story to grab onto. It's sort of like, I think of him based on the two movies I've seen, and again, I haven't seen Brick, as being the sort of like the lazy Wes Anderson. You know, like it's about the, you know, there's a style there, but there's just not enough substance. So that's my deal. And Dave's shaking his head, and he's about to tell me that I'm wrong, and he's going to give me the explanation of what things are supposed to be, because this isn't a matter of opinion. This is about factual thing, and he's going to tell me what it is. So why don't you do that, Dave White? Pretend like your little opinions that are bouncing around in your neurons are some sort of objective facts, and not just merely your whim. Go.
My whim tells me.
Your widow whim.
Oh, no, you're wrong. Oh, well, I have seen Brick. Here's what I feel about this movie. I feel like I'm not going to have a debate with you about this because I saw an entirely different film than you did. I don't believe that the makeup on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face is intended to convince you of anything. I think that it's almost an intentional disorienting effect.
Explain.
Excuse me for a moment. I'm having a problem here. Hold on. Sorry. I think there are examples in movies where prosthetic makeup is meant to erase the movie star so that you can believe a character, like Charlize Theron in Monster or Nicole Kidman in whatever that movie was.
The Hours.
And I think this is a different thing. I think this is, you know what Joseph Gordon-Levitt looks like. You know what Bruce Willis looks like. You know what Bruce Willis looked like 30 years ago. And you're right. He does look like Kirk Cameron with this stuff. And I think that is a thing that you're never supposed to forget. I think you're supposed to be like, I'm looking at something weird. I'm looking at something weird. It is an effect of disorientation. And it's a way of putting you on shaky ground as a viewer. And I believe that's an intentional thing. I could be completely wrong, but it's I like my opinion right now.
I didn't interrupt you.
Fine. I think that the time travel element of the movie is also not the hill it wants to die on. When you walk out of a movie like this and you suddenly have a million questions, but what about, and then what about, and what about, I think the movie also knows, much like with the makeup job, I think the movie also knows that time travel is impossible, and it locates that moment of impossibility, like, over and over again. You know, it runs up against its own impossibilities. And therefore, the point of the movie, I believe, is, and I said this in writing already, is the idea of salvation. And who gets saved and what? And for what reason? And who has to sacrifice for that to happen? And so It's a cool genre movie. It moves fast. There's a lot of cool action and stuff. I think that it's also a very moving film, in that you have to really get involved with the Emily Blunt storyline, and I'm not going to go into that very deeply because that would spoil a lot of the movie for people. And it really has nothing to do with romance either, in what I'm talking about. In Emily Blunt terms, it has to do with...
May I speak Emily Bluntly?
I I also am really excited about the look of Rian Johnson's movies, all three of them. I think maybe that I liked Brothers Bloom the least of these three. It had probably the most, you know, it gave me the most trouble. But I like that he wants to present his ideas visually. And so I'm a big fan of people who I think are real filmmakers in a really rigorous kind of formal sense. And I'm into him on that level, in like the Cronenberg level of someone who takes great care with what he's presenting to you and how he's framing things and how the look of the movie, the formal aspects, cinematography, you know, everything that you think of when you think of film in terms of structure. I think he's like that. And I'm excited to see this movie again for those reasons. Now that I know the story, I just want to go back and look at it. And that's a very real part of this movie for me. I was taken in with this movie in the same way that I was taken in with Taken by the Master, as you know, this is a real filmmaker making a real film. This isn't just a genre movie made by some hack. This is a guy who we're going to talk about in the next 20, 30 years as one of the great filmmakers. That's what I believe.
Okay, you're crazy.
Based on three movies, that's what I'm telling you.
You are high right now.
No, I'm not high right now.
And granted, I haven't seen all three movies, but I feel very strong, very
secure. I feel more strongly about him right now than I did about Paul Thomas Anderson after his first three movies.
Well, fine. And I think you're putting this guy on the Cronenberg level. You're high.
I'm not saying that he's that accomplished yet, obviously. You know, he's only made three movies. But I think in the same way that after Todd Haynes made three movies, I knew that I was watching a filmmaker that I would always want to watch. Ugh. I feel the same way about this guy.
This guy has yet to win me. I'm sorry. And granted, I didn't see Brick. I will say that again. But of the having seen 66% of his output as a filmmaker... you know, I'm sorry. I feel like this guy is all style and no cojones. Like, there is this guy cannot tell a story, cannot maintain a plot. It's all about flash and dazzle.
No.
Well, you're crazy.
There are many ways to tell a story.
Yeah.
And
pick one. Pick any way of telling a story. He doesn't do it.
Yeah, he does. And I believe that there's that. I believe there's that level of you know, substantive idea behind what he does. I think where he's going is really exciting, and I'm excited to watch what he does next.
To quote you,
which was the working title of Won't Back Down. Now, I saw Won't Back Down.
Tell us about it.
You did not see Won't Back
Down. I did not.
Okay. Maggie Gyllenhaal is a relentlessly optimistic bartender / used car lot secretary. She works two jobs.
/ single mom, right?
/ single mom, whose daughter, wherever the dad is, he's long gone. Daughter is dyslexic and is in what is the worst school in the universe.
Right.
Like, if they have schools on other planets, their worst school is 10 times better than the school she's in. The first scene that you see of her in this school is she's having trouble reading, and kids are laughing at her and making fun of her, and other kids are goofing around and fighting, and other kids are playing video games. The teacher is simultaneously ignoring the daughter while texting on her own phone and shopping for shoes online. Later in the movie, you will see in the same classroom with the same teacher, kids bullying her, ripping her backpack apart, and the teacher sort of like, when she complains to the teacher says, oh, don't be such a drama queen. Give me that bag, this destroyed bag. And so essentially, this child goes to the school that is located in hell.
This sounds like class of 1984.
Yeah, it's class of Newcomb High, really, is what it is. And there is no good happening in this school. In fact, the teacher across the hall is Viola Davis. And even she is, at first sight, shown to be a crappy teacher. Like, she's just sitting at her desk, and she's bored, and the kids are bored. And she realizes that at one point, you know, she might have been great, but now she sucks. And Maggie Gyllenhaal sees her, you know, when she goes to the school and sees the terrible situation in her daughter's classroom and the terrible situation in Viola Davis's classroom, and the terrible situation everywhere. And the principal ignores Maggie Gyllenhaal's problems. So Maggie Gyllenhaal, you know, like any good parent would do, tries to get this situation fixed, and she can't. She butts heads with everybody. She mostly butts heads with the teachers' union. You know how they are.
Boo.
Union thugs.
That was an ironic boo, by the way.
Yeah. And that's the point of the movie. The point of the movie is that teachers' unions are bad, 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 and that parents who want to take over their local schools and strip the teachers of their collective bargaining rights and turn the school into a charter school, they're the heroes of everybody.
And it's the only solution.
And not only is it the only solution, but there is no room for any kind of middle compromise or anything like that. Yeah. In fact, the film over and over presents, you know, the union side of things in a very sort of realistic, you know, gut level way. Like, well, what happens when, you know, a teacher is going to be fired for no good reason? And here's Maggie Gyllenhaal's response. I just want you to fix the school. I just want my daughter to have a good school. Why can't you just fix the school? And then they say, well, what about, you know, this other problem with, you know, teachers being worked to death and underfunded and, you know, that without a union, that's, you know, that's what you're looking for. Well, but good teachers won't mind. Why can't you just fix the school? There is not one moment where teacher union, you know, real life teacher union, you know, need
right
in the world is given any sort of you know, validation.
Right.
And so by the end of the movie, you're just so beaten down by, first of all, how boring it is. It would be one thing to make a propaganda film if it were exciting to watch. You know, if this were like the Rocky of parents starting a charter school. But this is a movie about parents starting a charter school. Who wants to go see that? Like, I know I talk all the time about, like, these esoteric sort of, you know, art films about, you know, the horse died, and then the potatoes ran out, and then the evil gypsy curse came, and then the lights went out, and the sun stopped shining. That's exciting. That is an exciting thing to watch. You know what's not exciting to watch?
Parents opening a charter school.
Yeah. Filling out paperwork and presenting it to school boards. That is not exciting. I'm sure there's a way to make that exciting. Mm. But this movie did not do that. So I wouldn't mind your propaganda movie so much if you were entertaining to me and you were interesting and you were, you know, had something to say. And if you didn't insult my intelligence every step of the way
right.
by withholding the other side's argument. You know, yeah. If you've got such a strong case for your thing, then argue it sufficiently yeah. in front of the people who are like, wait, what about this?
Maggie G versus the straw man, basically.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about who financed and distributed this thing.
Walden Media.
Yes.
They are a conservative production company. They're conservative Christians, I guess, but they're not. They don't make the Christian movies, really.
No, they don't. Well, they make Christian-y movies like the Narnia films.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
But no,
they don't make
the Kirk Cameron movies.
They don't make the Kirk Cameron movies exactly. They don't make Courageous
And actually, they've made movies that I really
like. Last Ounce of Courage. They made
Bridge, Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium and Bridge
to Terabithia, and those are both really good movies, family films that are really wonderful movies.
What else does Walden Media do, Dave?
Educational materials.
For?
Charter schools.
No! What do you know?
So you should perhaps...
And it's distributed by News Corp.
You should perhaps distrust people...
Who also has a financial stake in people creating charter schools.
Who have a financial stake, like $1 billion financial stake or more, in... the dismantling of public education.
Do you know what else Walden Media produced?
Tell me.
Waiting for Superman.
The other movie about how teachers' unions
are ruining everything.
And public education needs to be put in the hands of big corporations so that your kids can finally learn and have a Snickers. That's what happens in this movie, too, by the way. There's a moment where Maggie Gyllenhaal walks up to the kids and says, "Would anyone like a Snickers?" And I sat there in the movie theater thinking, I would love a Snickers, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Label out.
Maybe the 4D experience. Do I get a Snickers?
I remember watching Waiting for Superman because I was on that was the year I did the doc committee for the Spirit Awards. And I was like, and I asked Dave, who used to be a school teacher, like, you know, if this made any sense. And he said, well, I will never forget this. Your answer was, well, we didn't have unions in Texas, and the school still sucked.
Right.
So it can't be the union's fault, you know.
Yeah. Now, when I was a school teacher in Texas, and we did not have a union, we had the right to work.
Right to be exploited.
And so, you know, I wound up paying for a lot of stuff in my classroom right out of my own pocket a lot, all the time. If I wanted extra materials to do something new and innovative and cool, my dime. Mm. If I needed something, I got it. Because I went out and I got it.
Right.
My work environment did not provide me all the things I needed all the time. If you worked for a big corporation and they said, oh, you have to go buy all these work materials on your own, you'd be like, no, you don't. That's not what you do. That's not how the world works. That's not how it works at work. And so we didn't have unions and everything sucked. And so I was lucky, mind you. I was very lucky. I had a really kind of, you know.
You had a cush deal.
I had a really wonderful school. My school was within the district. But it was a special school just for kids who were brand new to the country. It was brand new ESL kids. It was a special school where they went for 1 year of intensive English across the curriculum. All subjects were taught math, but also math was also taught by an ESL teacher who was also a math teacher. And so the kid got math instruction and English instruction at the same time.
Right.
Now, I was just the English person. So my job was just, you know, hardcore English. And so, we were a very small school. We had very small class sizes. We had, you know, a very sort of cooperative kind of teacher environment. And our principal was also a teacher in the classroom. She was the principal and a teacher. So she would be half a day principal, half a day teaching. And so it was a very experimental thing in the middle of our district. But we were still in Texas, and George Bush was our governor at the time. Right. So
you can have terrible schools without a teacher union.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, teachers unions are a convenient whipping boy for these folks, and if they could get around, pretty much it seems to me that if you could get a situation where genuinely horrible teachers that are protected by unions, if there was some way to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. And right now, if I'm going to believe any sticking point, it's that. You've got tenured teachers that they just can't do anything with who are horrible teachers. And that exists. That exists in every school. And I'm sure there are union schools that are completely failing where a lot of the teachers are horrible. Something should be done about that through the union. But don't take away that union.
No.
You got to look for that union label.
Absolutely.
Because the minute you take that away, you're going to get some teacher who's going to get bounced out on his butt for teaching people in Texas that the world is round.
Right.
And that's where you end up going. Especially in the states like Texas and Mississippi and Alabama, where people are proud of everything they don't know. And I'm from there, so I can say that without anyone saying, you're prejudiced. Well, no, I'm not. I lived it. Yeah. So, anyway, this movie sucks.
And it's tanking, so there. Doing well this weekend, though, in its limited release and it's opening wider next Friday, is Pitch Perfect, which they unleashed on about like 500 screens.
300.
Three, is that it?
Yeah, not even 500.
Wow, okay. But it's still in like the top 10. So
right. Because everyone's excited about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good word about it, and it's super fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There is absolutely nothing new about this movie.
No, of course not.
In terms of story, the characters are all complete, types. There's not one believable person doing one believable thing in the movie. And yet, if you think of it as an alternate universe, like Looper, you will not have a bad time. You will also find yourself strangely drawn to the world of a cappella singing, a thing that I was never drawn to. Not even. Oh, what do you mean you not ever? You either. I bought the Warblers record.
Well, first of all, that was a gift.
That was a gift.
Second of all,
that I held to my heart and I petted it lovingly. And
right, whatever.
Who's the man who says, I like the Warblers version of Bills better?
No, I did not say that. I said Teenage Dream.
No.
Get it right.
No, you were listening to Bills. I walked into the office and you were listening to Bills by the friggin' Warblers. And I was like, this is fine. Destiny's Child. This song is great by Destiny's Child. And you're like, I don't care about that one. You said this. I don't care about the Destiny's Child version.
I'm talking about this. Those
collegiate. Don't make a pretend.
You shush. I'm talking about like collegiate a cappella groups, which was portrayed in this film.
Uh-huh.
And
yes.
And I've never had any interest or liking for any
of them. Oh, I see. So we're going to split hairs.
No, we're talking about what we're talking about.
We're talking about a cappella singing.
Oh, God. You don't like any a cappella singing ever at all.
I like Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Good for you. I liked Todd Rundgren's a cappella album.
I'm kidding,
there have been examples of a cappella. No, you said it. You said it, so that's be true. We have to throw it to you for the rest of your life now. You like Don't Worry, Be Happy. Blah! I'm talking about what this movie is about, collegiate a cappella groups. Mm. Collegiate a cappella groups I've never, ever, ever liked. And this movie makes them seem like they would be kind of fun.
Yeah, because they do No Diggity.
Yeah.
And they got Esther Dean in their group. I showed you an Esther Dean video this week.
Yes, you did. Which Gary Cotty had shown me before.
Oh, he had shown you Drop It Low?
Yeah, I told you. You only...
No, you're thinking of Azealia Banks.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
I showed you Azealia Banks' 212 video.
Because that's what she's listening to.
Because that's what Anna Kendrick is listening to.
At the beginning of the movie.
At the beginning of the movie. That's sort of like the announcement that here she is.
Right.
She's going to change things.
Why don't you explain what this movie is about?
A cappella choirs, girls versus boys. Did y'all see Damsels in Distress? You should see Damsels in Distress. Is that on DVD yet?
I think it just came out.
All right, go see Damsels. Watch Damsels in Distress on DVD, because it's essentially the same movie. Only
that might be stretching it a bit.
Only this is now, instead of like a do-gooder suicide prevention swing dancing or country line dance, whatever it was they were doing in Damsels in Distress.
All kinds of dancing.
They were doing all kinds of dancing.
They invented the Sambola.
Oh, yeah, they invented the Sambola. Except, that movie was like this group of, college girls who had very, very strict rules about their social group. And And this movie's the same way. The a cappella female group is very sort of like
the Bellas,
chaste and prim and boring.
No. The rule is that they aren't allowed to have sex with any members of the male a cappella group.
Meaning they're not allowed to have sex
because nobody else wants.
Because no one else wants to have sex.
Oh, now.
In the world of this movie, that's the case.
Well, then why is Brittany Snow in the shower with that guy?
Because he's a singer. You never see that guy again.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
You
don't. And that guy was like, you know, just sort of like, he might as well have just been washing her back.
It's kind of chaste, yeah. Admittedly, yes.
So the boy choir is full of themselves, and the girl choir, and they're very brash and showy, and they do all sorts of, contemporary pop hits. Mm-hmm. And the girls choir just does The Sign by Ace of Base. Over and over and over again, and like they're honing the perfect recipe or something. You know, it's like we're gonna get it right one of these times. And then so Anna Kendrick comes along and she's like, "You guys need to do cool songs. You guys need to be cooler. You guys need to let."
Well, she wants to be a DJ.
Yeah,
and she does a lot of mashups, which the kids are all about. It's trending.
And she convinces them to let, you know, fat people and black people and Asian people into the group.
Well, she doesn't do that. They do it on their own. She joins at the same time as the fat people and the black people and the Asian people.
Are you sure it's not her influence?
No, it's not her influence.
Well, then what?
They're desperate.
It's been like 4 weeks since I've seen this movie. All right. I saw it early.
Yeah, this is why you never want to do the plot synopsis. All right, the previous.
I always forget the plot by the time we do this podcast. After I finished writing my review,
you flush it.
It all flushes right out of my brain.
The previous year, the Bellas went to nationals, but unfortunately, one of the gals who is now running the group. Rather violently got ill on stage.
Okay, yeah.
And so they're sort of the laughing stock, and nobody wants to be a member. So like, there's like two returning members, desperate to fill the ranks of this all female a cappella group.
And out of their desperation comes a motley crew of glee like people.
Exactly. Yeah. The fat girl, the black girl who's probably a lesbian, the very quiet Asian girl. And Anna Kendrick, who doesn't really want to get...
She's a rebel.
Yes, who doesn't want to get involved with any of this stuff. But her dad, who's a professor at the college, and so she's going there for free. She wants to go to L.A. to become a producer. He makes a deal with her that she has to give college the old college try for a year and, like, get involved with a group and make friends and da-da-da. So she joins this thing when they realize that she can sing. And then she's trying to get them to shake things up and not just do Ace of Base all the time. But the lead gal is not having it. And there's this guy who joins the all-male group who's smitten with her, but it's forbidden and blah, 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 and things. And
he's the guy from Spring Awakening.
Yes, Skylar Astin, who was also in Hamlet 2. And, you know, is a perfectly adequate leading man.
The rule now is... if you were in Spring Awakening and you didn't parlay it into like the big next step in your career, then you are a failure at life. Because I think every single person now in Spring Awakening has gone on to do other things in like higher, much higher profile.
Well, Jonathan Groff and Lea Michele and
the guy on the newsroom.
The guy in the newsroom.
And now this dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if any original cast members of Spring Awakening are listening, and you're in between gigs and you're just kind of lying around on the couch, what happened? What do you do? What's wrong with you?
Why can't you be more like that, Lea Michele?
Why can't you? Yeah. Look how well these other people are doing for themselves. What's your problem? No, it's a weird sort of thing. Like it's this American Graffiti sort of thing where, like, everyone in that show is going to go on to be famous.
Right, Dazed and Confused.
We still believe in you, cast of Spring Awakening. Spring Awakening. Even though I've never seen Spring Awakening.
Me neither. Your time will come.
Yeah. I watched a clip on YouTube this week to sort of check out who
what
faces I recognize now. Yeah.
Was it the Bitch of Living number? That's the only one I know.
No, it was some other thing where What's-His-Face from Pitch Perfect was the lead singer in the song. Okay. And his hair was all curly. Like, they curl his hair in this weird sort of, like, old-timey way, like matching little ringlets on the sides?
Well, it's set in like the 19-teens.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why his hair looked like that. That is how little I know about Spring Awakening.
I know that.
Didn't know when it was set.
And that it's about sex and that they sing The Bitch of Living. That's about all I know.
What's the... So anyway, Pitch Perfect is a lot of fun.
It's a hoot, yeah.
It's silly and it is very much in the tradition of movie musicals that aren't really about anything other than let's sing more, you know. So
it is brashly silly.
Mm-hmm. If you like Bring It On, you'll really like this movie. Yeah. That's pretty much
it's Glee It On.
Right.
Our field trip yesterday, we went to...
We're going to talk about Hotel Transylvania.
We're going to get there.
Oh, we are?
You said we were going to talk about our field trip after we talked about Looper, and then you kept veered off in the direction. So
you don't want to arrange the show in a way that gets all the movies out of the way, and then the extraneous things like our field trip and the listener mail and DVD
recommendations. I like to mix it up because I don't think anybody's listening to this in chunks. And if anything, they're going to listen to the new movie reviews and then stop. So I figure if we intersperse the new movie reviews with things that aren't new movie reviews, they will be forced to listen to hear the rest of the show. See what I'm going here?
They could probably just fast forward it like you do with whatever.
That's probably true too.
Yeah. What happened on our field trip yesterday?
No, let's talk about Hotel Transylvania, because everything has to be in order. There must be hospital corners on this program.
The people are bad, and the monsters are good.
Or Dave White will have to lick all the light switches.
And Dracula has opened a hotel, which is also kind of a sanctuary for monsters.
It's a place for monsters to hide away.
It's very racist because they won't let non-monsters in.
Yes. Dracula...
Wait, isn't that a joke in the movie? Doesn't someone actually say that's racist?
Racist, okay. Yeah. Dracula's wife... Dracula, well, in a different context, but same difference. Dracula's wife is killed, and so he vows to protect their young daughter, Mavis, and he builds the Hotel Transylvania, which is a place for monsters to sort of get away from the world and hide out from the terrible pitchfork and torch-bearing humans. And then Mavis turns 118 and decides that she's ready to see the world and find out what's going on out there, even though her dad is terrified at the thought of it.
She has Little Mermaid syndrome.
Exactly. Yeah. She wants to go somewhere out there. And along comes a human tourist, voiced by Andy Samberg, who stumbles upon the place, even though it's been well hidden. And he and Mavis are immediately smitten with each other, and Dracula is not down, and so they have to figure out how to hide him from the other monsters and not let them know that there's a human on the premises. And
they turn him into a Frankenstein monster-like creature. Yes.
And they have to convince Frankenstein.
He's the cousin of Frankenstein.
Yeah, monster. And they have to convince Frankenstein that he's the cousin of his arm.
And they call him Frankenstein. Like, they don't call him Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
They call him Frankenstein because that's just what... Look, that's his name.
Yes.
From that, I know the real name is this is the monster.
Yes,
but he's
let
Frankenstein.
Let it go, people. We know Frankenstein is the scientist and not the monster.
So Frankenstein says,
I had a great time at this movie, and I really wasn't expecting to because it's the posse of people who put together all the movies that I hate most in the world, namely Adam Sandler and his crew. Sandler is the voice of Dracula. David Spade's in there. Kevin James. I forget who else. But it's really witty and it's clever and it looks great. It's directed by Genndy Tartakovsky, the guy who created Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack and was one of the main creative forces behind the Powerpuff Girls.
Yes.
It's a movie that I would recommend paying extra for the 3D. You know, they do some... Yeah, they do some,
I agree with that.
There's some fun visual stuff with it.
And it's definitely aimed at children.
Yeah.
It's not Paranorman. Uh-huh. You know, you've got a movie like Paranorman that's really... It's kind of an adult film.
Or older kids.
Yeah. And but this is really aimed at kids. Like,
well,
and there were a lot of little elementary school aged kids at our screening, and they were
wrapped.
They were taken.
Although
they were into this movie.
Christy said her 3-year-old son was scared in the trailer by Dracula's
Well, yeah, I knew that's a thing that would get kids to scream at the beginning. But other than that, there's nothing.
No, it's totally...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was... I'm hearing that Tartakovsky apparently did a major rewrite of the whole thing, but the credited screenwriters are Robert Smigel, who is, you know, the TV Funhouse Triumph the Insult Comic Dog guy, and then, I've forgotten the other guy's name, but who somebody I'd never heard of, but who has this amazing track record of British stuff. He worked on Alan Partridge,
Brass Eye,
yeah. Borat, and Bruno, and Arthur Christmas, which yeah. I liked a lot.
Arthur Christmas is so great.
Arthur Christmas is so good. Yeah. It's coming out on DVD soon, and we're going to talk about it. Oh, that reminds me. I was looking through something with old shows today.
Yeah.
Now that Cabin in the Woods is out on DVD,
yes.
We have to go back and do our spoiler-filled review of it.
Does anyone care?
No one's asked. We don't have to.
That's a good reason for us not to do it.
Okay, fine. Then we won't. Never mind. Hotel Transylvania, I really liked it a lot. It's an interesting kind of late summer, fall, where you've got Paranorman, and now this, and next week we'll have Tim Burton's Frankenweenie.
Yep. Which we just saw on yesterday.
Yes. And we'll talk about next week.
No, we won't. There is no show next week.
You want to talk about Frankenweenie?
We'll talk about it when we come home.
In 2 weeks.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, listeners. Dave has decided that we're not going to talk about next week's movies.
I'll jump the gun.
Until the week after. All right, fine. So in 2 weeks, you will hear us talk about Frankenweenie.
Yes.
And the Paperboy.
And the Yeah, the Paperboy.
Something to look forward to.
There's all kind of things going on in Paperboy. There's a whole lot of stuff happening in Paperboy.
Yeah, we'll cover that when we get back. Our field trip was, after going to see Frankenweenie, which is, of course, a stop-motion animated film, we saw another film that featured stop-motion animation, The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm.
With the Puppetoons.
It was George Pal directed the fable sequences, and the rest was directed by Henry Levin. The reason we went to see this movie was because they're doing a Cinerama festival at the Cinerama Dome. And Cinerama, as you may know, a short-lived process from the 50s where basically you filmed with three cameras and then you projected three side-by-side movies to make one very wide, curved image. They mostly did travelogues like This is Cinerama and Cinerama Holiday and Russian Adventure, but they did two narrative films that were shot in the three-camera process. One of them is How the West Was Won, which we saw at the Dome a few years ago.
You did, not me.
And then the other one, which I'd never seen, was The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm, so I was really curious to check it out. It turns out they were showing the only print that is the only three print version of it that
in
is left
existence.
On Earth. Like, they got it from Australia. It has never been restored or anything. It does pop up on TCM a couple times a year.
And now, thanks to this film festival, it is a much more damaged print than it was when they started.
Yeah. Under the best of circumstances, Cinerama is really hard to pull off because you've got three movies side by side and they have to be in perfect sync and they have to be overlapping just so that, you know, like if somebody is split between the two screens, you're not seeing like two faces or whatever. And this was a print from, you know, 50 years ago when the film first opened. So it was a little tetchy at times, but it was
it was a little burn-up-y.
Yeah.
Is what that, it was that at too. Times.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not great, that movie.
Oh, wait, the movie itself?
Yeah.
That movie is boring as F. That movie.
I'm glad I saw it.
There are people who are nostalgic for it, you know, like, it was a film of my childhood or whatever.
Seeing it for the first time in your 40s, whew. I'm glad I saw it because, you know, look, there were only two narrative films made in Cinerama, and now I've seen them.
Yeah, as an experience to have, I'm glad I had it.
Yeah.
And
Russ Tamblyn was there.
It wasn't just Russ Tamblyn, though. Russ Tamblyn was there, who got up before the movie and talked.
And looks exactly like he did on Twin Peaks.
Who dresses and looks exactly like he did on Twin Peaks. And who, now, if you don't know who Russ Tamblyn is, he was in West Side Story.
And Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yeah, he's a movie star from back in the day. Yeah. And he's still alive and kicking. I guess he's in his 70s now, at least.
At least.
And so he showed up yesterday for the screening, but he didn't just show up by himself.
Oh, no.
He brought his buddies. he brought his West Side Story pals with him, Rita Moreno and George Shakiris. Like, and I just want to know, like, this I want to know the conversation that happened that yesterday, Saturday morning. Hey, what are you doing today? Rita Moreno. I'm just polishing my Oscar and my Grammy and my Tony and my Emmy. That's about it. A little gardening. Some light yoga ink, perhaps, to keep it all stretched. Want to go see The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm with me and George Shakiris?
It's in Cinerama.
It's in Cinerama. It's at the Dome. People are going to not know who we are anymore. It'll be great. Sure, I'm not doing anything. I like the idea of old movie stars just being like, yeah, sure, let's go do this thing. Let's just go hang out. Let's go hang out at the Cinerama Dome on Saturday.
I think at some point in your career where you go from, ugh, I'll be mobbed, to, ooh, maybe I'll be mobbed.
Yeah. People were totally into him, though, and they were very excited when the other two were, like,
announced.
Announced. Oh, you're already sitting here in the audience? No one even noticed you when you walked in.
And then the great thing was that because there were some technical glitches with the movie where it would start and then stop. And like the lights would kind of come halfway up.
And this is the thing with digital projection now. We're never going to have, again, the movie going anymore, which is what happened yesterday. Yeah. And so he just popped right up in his seat, stood up in his aisle, and was like, let me tell you some more things about being in this picture. It was fantastic.
I was the only actor to be in two Cinerama movies. It's because there were only two for us. Lucky you were in both of them.
No, he was great.
Yeah.
And the experience was cool. I love seeing movies at the Cinerama Dome. I like the weirdness of seeing a film in Cinerama. I have now seen two films in actual Cinerama. I've seen this now, and I've seen This Is Cinerama. And I like how it's just not good. I like how...
It's a very ambitious, good idea.
I like how this terrible idea has managed to gain a foothold, this culty kind of foothold, among people who really love it. But when you watch a movie in Cinerama, everything looks like it's shot in a fun house. Like, everything looks like you're in a room.
There are no straight lines.
You're in a room that is ostensibly just a room, but it looks like the walls are in a zigzag way.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't do close-ups.
Everything's turning a corner all the time.
Yeah, there's so many shots of, like, you know, people on a street, like, turning a corner. Like, that's the sweet spot for these three cameras. They do it a lot. And it's like, if you look at This Is Cinerama, I mean, literally, this movie only exists to show off the process. Like, the opening scene is on what's the famous roller coaster on Coney Island?
I don't know.
The Comet or whatever.
A roller coaster.
A roller coaster, and, you know, I'm sure for audiences in 1950, whatever, they're like, oh, it feels like I'm on the roller coaster. It's right. You know, I'm overwhelmed. You know, and there's like, here's the Vienna Boys Choir, and here's the water skiing.
That was exciting.
Cypress Gardens.
There's some really stodgy moments,
but it's
that awesome. Water skiing is a kick, though.
Yeah, but it's
watching the water skiing and This Is Cinerama is rad.
It's literally just all about, like, let's show off what this thing does and what it looks like. And so, okay, fine. If you go see a movie called This Is Cinerama, that's obviously what it's going to be. But then you go see The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm and you think it's going to be like, you know, that there's going to be a plot and stuff. And there is. But, like, there is a sequence where Russ Tamblyn is riding on the back of a carriage carrying Princess Yvette Mimieux back to the castle. And the carriage ride takes 15 minutes just so they can show off what it looks like with the, like, you know, the POV shot of the thing racing around racing around corners, you know, or the shot from behind, or the shot of the right in the face of the carriage driver, or like Russ Tamblyn tumbles down the hill and the cameras go ass over tea kettle and make you seasick.
Right.
And it's like, is there a story? What's happening? Why is this carriage ride taking so long? It's like, is this Heaven's Gate all of a sudden?
Fairy tales. The story is fairy tales.
Yes.
And, you know, all those fairy tales that you love from the Brothers Grimm.
Starring Peeping Tom and the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah.
Carl Boehm and Lawrence Harvey play the Brothers Grimm, and it's grim.
I also enjoyed the crowd.
Yes.
The crowd was great. And it's good that we occasionally get out amongst that kind of crowd because it's a way for us to keep each other safe from
becoming that
because
the super hardcore format nerds.
There's a level of nerd where you kind of give up on everything else about your life and only focus on the thing that you like a lot.
Right.
And I don't think that's healthy. And it's perhaps even bad for you. And while I appreciate obsession and all of the, you know, the detailed, you know, knowledge that comes from that, I don't want to dress like them. And I don't want to succumb to the hygiene issues that I noticed.
I know everybody.
It's strange to be in that crowd.
People
to observe that crowd.
People throw the term Asperger's around a lot, rather willy nilly these days. But I think there's definitely a certain type of mentality these folks who get so tunnel visioned into the thing that they're all about, and there's a lot of that, especially in Los Angeles. And I'm sure there's like a music equivalent of that, of like the vinyl collector types and stuff.
Yes,
these are the movie people who like will want to come see something that they know they're never going to get to see again, so they can check it off their list, or that it's some very unique kind of event,
kind of like what we did yesterday.
Sort of, yes, but to an obsessive degree.
Now I have seen both of them. There, I have accomplished this thing.
Okay, you're right.
Push the glasses back. I'm up not on your nose.
I'm not pretending that I'm completely divorced from this. But as you said,
you're a fine dresser.
But we keep each other in check by going amongst the really hardcore.
You're a dapper gentleman.
Thank you, sir.
You take a shower,
and with some regularity.
Yeah. And you do not wear a fanny pack.
I do not.
And so this is you're still functioning.
Thank you. Functioning is the word I was looking for earlier. I couldn't think of it.
So my DVD pick this week is a movie I haven't seen.
Okay.
But I just like the title so much that I want to see it.
Okay.
Big Tits Zombie.
I should never have told you about that.
I'm super excited now to see it. I don't know what it's about at all. Comes out Tuesday?
I think it's in October sometime.
Oh, it's sometime this month?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it came out Tuesday.
I didn't say that.
All right, I'm going to do more of my homework
about
Big Tits Zombie.
And you'll get back to us.
And sometime. I'll get back to you all about Big Tits Zombie after I find out the release date.
Can we even say that word?
What?
On a clean
podcast? That's not a swear.
Okay, fine. That's true. It's in the title. It's on Amazon.
Right.
Here's what I don't get. The whole point of zombies is that they're like rotting away and their flesh is all gross.
I can't wait.
So why would you
care if it had
a zombie had? Yeah, I don't get it.
The movie's going to tell us.
Do they fall off? I mean, I don't even know.
If we're lucky, that's what happens to this zombie.
Okay, fine. Might be
better if it were a guy zombie. Just more freaky and more horror, you know, like Meatloaf in Fight Club.
Oh, now I get where you're going. Okay. Took me a second. Mine is actually Hamlet 2, because Skylar Astin from Pitch Perfect is in it, and I was reminded this week that it's really funny, and it's a movie that I think got a lot of pre-release hype and then didn't really do...
Anybody went to see that movie.
Yeah, it didn't do a lot of business, but I think it's the kind of movie where if you were to discover it on DVD or on cable, you would enjoy it. So I will post Amazon links to both of those films on our Linoleum Knife page on Facebook, and if you click on them to purchase Big Tit Zombie or Hamlet 2, or if you just click on them and then go buy something else, we get a kickback, and it's very nice.
How much of a kickback do
we
get?
Not a huge one, but, you know, every little bit helps.
True.
They're getting this for free.
Not for long.
Please.
I have some mail.
Yes.
This is from Jenny.
Pirate Jenny?
No. She sent us her top 10 list.
Okay.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Harold and Maude.
Yay.
Life of Brian.
Okay.
Some Like It Hot.
Yay.
Breakfast Club.
Yay.
Stop Making Sense.
Yay.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Mm. Oh, come on.
I'm not the biggest fan, but go on.
You hate everything good. Oh, what is the deal with you? Tim Burton's late 80s to mid 90s work is number 7 on her list, which I can accept that.
Collectively, yeah. Yeah. Sure, okay.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
The Shining.
Okay.
Die Hard.
Yeah.
Honorable mentions.
Uh-huh.
Glengarry Glen Ross. Totally love. Back to School.
Yes.
Forbidden Zone.
Haven't seen it. I need to. It pops up occasionally, and I have not gotten
around. I've seen it. It's, you know, it's of its moment.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're not much of an Oingo Boingo fan.
I've never been really much of an Oingo Boingo fan. Okay. House, the Japanese.
Oh, Houseu.
Yeah. Back to the Future.
Okay.
Alien.
Sure.
Grizzly Man.
Okay.
Thank you, Jenny.
You are 100%
knife. That is 100% knife. Even with the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you're going to give her that?
Yeah. The honorable mentions were good enough. She gets extra credit. My deal with the Trains, I hate the scenes at the end where the sentimental John Candy.
Oh, I've got people that care for me. And I'm it was sweet and nice. Mm.
Usually you're the and I'm the one who's falling for this stuff, but I was not having it in that movie.
I'm made of puddings inside.
Only physiologically.
This is from Daniel James.
Okay.
Dan James. Greetings, beloved podcasters. We're beloved. See, doesn't that make you feel all puddingy inside?
Very.
Yeah.
Tapioca.
Without further ado, here is my contribution to August's installment of Listener Mail. Now, in my defense, this is the very last letter from August.
Okay.
So we're
so come October, we'll be hitting September.
We're boldly catching up.
Okay.
I'm figuring by the end of October, I know I said this, by the end of September we'd have caught up with everything, but by the end of October we will have caught up with everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even with one show missing. Okay.
The reason one show is going to be missing is we're going to Texas next weekend for my mom's memorial. She died on August 23rd, but her birthday is October 7th. Or her 70th birthday, and my family decided that they would have her memorial on that day.
Yes.
And so we are going to Texas next weekend. So there will be no show. So enjoy this one. Listen to it twice. Whatever.
We'll try and pad it out and make it long.
Yeah. He says, firstly, the challenges of creating an ultimate top 10. Contenders tainted by biased nostalgia. Juggling the snooty with the schlocky. Movies once on a pedestal that upon recent revisitations have lost their luster.
Ooh. Betty Luster?
Outrageous guilty pleasures. Most watched versus actual quality. Continuing to discover cinematic gems daily.
Aren't we all?
Daily. So here goes. The ultimate list as of August 2012. Blowout. Yes. Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
The Sweet Hereafter.
We've talked about this.
We have talked about
this. Not our favorite Adam McGoin, but okay.
Temple of Doom.
Yes. Yes.
Secrets and Lies.
Yes.
Heat. Yes. Mm. Yes. Three times yes.
Me.
Three yeses from me, no yeses from you.
Meh from me.
Out of Sight.
Yes.
Seven.
Yes.
The Apartment.
Yes.
And here's one I know you hate. Breaking the Waves. Love listening to you guys. My Monday ritual without fail. Keep it up. Take care, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. I hate your list. No. You're, what, a 70% knife for me, I guess?
From you, yeah.
Yeah, you give him 100. Because
100.
You're that way.
Yeah, I'm 100%. That's the way that I am. I'm 100%.
You're 100% pushover.
I am a female. Dynamoxy. Now I feel compelled to send in my favorite movies. Wait, did I already read this?
I think you might have.
Eternal Sunshine, Brick, Mean Girls, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Did I
already read this?
I don't remember. I thought, because I know she's emailed Secretly Timid a lot. I thought we had read her email.
All right. Well, I'm just going to go through this anyway.
Let's read it just in case.
I don't want to.
We don't want to not.
I can't remember what we did 5 minutes ago, no, much less than earlier podcasts. Number one, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. That is the number one.
Great.
All right. The next are in no particular order. Brick. I wasn't sure if I was just swayed by my fangirl relationship with this movie, but then the female last week listed the brothers Bloom, which I felt didn't have nearly as much stuff going on, yet also didn't seem to tie up as neatly at the end either. So either way, now I think it belongs on the list. Mean Girls and Forgetting Sarah Marshall. This may be only because Forgetting Sarah Marshall is on FX right now, but I realize it makes my day whenever it comes on. It's a good Saturday afternoon movie, but also I like Mean Girls more, so it's kind of either both make it. It sounded like either both make it or neither do.
I compared Forgetting Sarah Marshall to Eric Rohmer when it came out, and
yeah.
A few people scoffed at me for that, but I don't care.
It's about time people started scoffing at you more, really. Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978.
Okay.
Just terrific.
I like all the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I like the 50s one. I like the Abel Ferrara one. I like them all.
A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Okay.
Most people would pick the Muppet movie or Muppets Take Manhattan.
Are you saying that or are you reading this?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I have some issues with it, but I think it's mostly really good. As my friend Kurt Holman pointed out, all the songs seem to end like, la, 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 Christmas.
Right.
But, you know, whatever.
It turns out I own Safe, which you were talking about recently. It was one of several movies suggested in a film studies class. And I think I ordered it used on Amazon out of spite towards Netflix for not having it available. I was going to write something comparing Revolutionary Road to Far From Heaven, then was going to be fancy and also do American Beauty and Safe, but that was really hard. I don't think I'll include it on my favorites list, but I do think it helped me learn something about the atmosphere of early 90s Southern California. Here's more of a list. Awesome, I effing shot that. The Beastie Boys documentary.
Which I never saw.
It's great.
Is it good?
Okay. Yeah. And Roadside Prophets.
Ew.
Which, have I seen Roadside Prophets? Which one is
John
that?
John Doe is in it, and one of the Beastie Boys. And
oh, I haven't seen that.
Stephen Tobolowsky, yeah. Not
she says, this is
you one, lost me there, Moxie.
This sorry. Is one listing because I became obsessed with the Beastie Boys after we got 2 free months of Showtime channels, and they happened to air 3 of the major films that feature ad rock. Well, mostly I also saw the Beastie Boys in concert by accident like a year earlier, but this set the second phase of fandom in motion. Did you ever see the Beastie Boys live?
Yes, did you? On the tour with Run DMC.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I saw them in the early 90s. They were touring with Big Chief, this sort of loud, heavy band. And also, who else was on the bill? A hip-hop group. Black Sheep, Fushnikins, one of those.
Yeah. I saw it was the Together Forever tour, which I saw with Kurt, and his joke was that Run DMC would be trying to erase that.
it was Fushnikins. I saw Fushnikins.
Now I'm wondering if Dynamoxy has seen Lost Angels.
Well, she might be talking about
if we're getting into
the movies with Ad Rock,
Beastie Boys cinema. No. Here. Okay.
A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints. This one is also Showtime's fault, or maybe IFC's.
Didn't see it.
Incendies.
Didn't see it.
The Thief and the Cobbler.
Oh, interesting choice.
That's it.
Okay.
How much knife? Count all those up.
There's a bunch that I haven't seen, so I'm just going to take off half a point for for Roadside Prophets and say 95%.
95% knife.
That's still a solid A.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm getting bogged down in finding out which emails are what.
I thought you had a system.
I do, but this one is yeah. Sorry. Jerry Stacy. This is the last one I'm going to read.
Okay. And this is it for August?
Oh, no, we're into September now.
Oh, exciting. Yeah. Okay.
Jerry Stacy says, hey there, Dave and Alonzo, as a birthday present to myself, I sat down today and listed out my top 10 movies to send to you. You'll note this was your birthday present to yourself. Dude, go to a spa.
People celebrate in different ways. Maybe afterwards he went to Denny's and got a free Moons Over Miami.
You know what's really good at Denny's?
What?
The pot roast.
Really?
Yeah. I ate the pot roast at Denny's once about 5 years ago.
Where was I?
It was really good. You were not there.
Was this in Texas?
I was alone.
At a Denny's.
At a Denny's.
That's the saddest thing I ever heard.
Late at night. I was out, you know, I was out gallivanting. No.
You can't even keep a straight face for that.
It was.
You're never out late
in the wee hour. It was actually 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I was going to say. You were having the senior buffet.
No, it wasn't even at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What happened was I was in Palm Springs at a book reading. I was on my book tour.
Yes. For Exile in Guyville. Yes. Still available.
And I left the reading and I went to the Coachella house. You know, there's always the big Coachella house that Brian Hill and all the guys from San Diego always have. And I went to the Coachella house, and I went swimming for a little bit, but then I was starving because at the Coachella house, there was beer.
That was it.
Yeah. There was beer. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. There was also Doritos.
For a balanced diet. Part of this nutritious breakfast.
And so I was like, I stood there. I stayed for like 2 hours, you know, and then I was so hungry. And they were like, where are you going? And I was like, you guys don't have any food in this house. I'm starving for my dinner. So I went to Denny's, got the pot roast, and it was delicious.
Good to know.
If you ever at the Denny's in Palm Springs, get that pot roast.
Tell them Dave sent you.
Tell them. Tell them I recommended it.
Unless the chef's having a special that day.
Right. Okay, so here's his list. The Wiz.
Okay. I think that's one of those movies that you see when you're a kid and...
Like The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm.
For instance, it imprints on you and you're helpless, you know. And it does have some moments. A lot of it doesn't work, but...
It's shorter than the Brothers Grimm movie, though.
Well, you have to remember, the Brothers Grimm movie was a lot longer for us because they threw in an intermission and all those technical
details. It had a running time of forever.
Okay, what else?
Amelie.
Great.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay.
The Women.
Sure.
Babe, Pig in the City.
Nice.
North by Northwest.
Okay.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Sure.
Mahogany.
Okay.
I'm wondering if this person is gay.
Mahogany and The Wiz on your top 10 list. No Love for Lady Sings the Blues.
A Room with a View.
Or Double Platinum.
A Room with a View.
Mm.
Who is Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Sure.
The Wiz, these are listed in no particular order. And I know this person is gay. I'm not guessing. Yeah, I know. I know, Mr. Stacy.
Yes.
They're listed in no particular order except for The Wiz, which is my all-time number one.
Wow.
I love that movie, and if you don't, you're wrong.
All right, well, I guess he told us then.
You did. We are told. We are told about The Wiz. We have no choice but to list this list as 100% knife because we're wrong about The Wiz.
Yes. But we do know where we're
going. You know what? I liked The Wiz when I was a kid. I saw it in the theater when it came out.
I saw it, yeah, me too.
Saw it theatrically when it came out when I was young. And I liked the part where What's-Her-Face sings, Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News. Mm.
I like the Brand New Day number.
I also like that.
Yeah.
I like the Brand New Day part, too. After they kill her.
Right.
I like that part.
But boy, you got to get through a lot to get there.
Yeah, you do.
Sidney Lumet, you know?
You know what else I like?
Did a lot of things
I like Michael Jackson's bit as well.
Yeah, and Nipsey Russell's, for that matter.
I don't really even remember Nipsey Russell's.
Slide Some Oil to Me.
I like Michael Jackson's part. Yeah.
I just remember like being... It's... Okay, Sidney Lumet. It was like, you know, one of the great New York filmmakers. He made Serpico, you know. He really, I don't know, had quite the right vision for a musical. Because he makes New York... The fantasy Oz New York really grimy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's this haze in the air, and it's just the colors are all, it just all looks ugly. It's an ugly movie.
The Yellow Brick Road just looks sort of.
It's made out of Congolium, literally.
Yeah.
You know, you've got those, I just remember them being attacked by the garbage cans and the subway station. It's just like, it's a grimy movie, I think. Like, you know, he shoots Ezon down the road behind them. So you never see like Diana Ross or Michael Jackson's face, or maybe in profile when they're like talking, singing to each other.
Alonzo,
what?
You're wrong.
Okay, okay, fine. You're right. Sorry, Jerry. I'm wrong. Written by Joel Schumacher. That was.
This episode is over.
Oh, because you say?
Read the list.
Oh, fine. We thank you for listening, as always, even though Dave is wrong about everything. And we urge you to check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, which may or may not ever have a second episode. Who knows?
Is that real? Is that true?
Still hasn't done one.
He hasn't done a second one.
No. Fat
you
Guy.
You just... You wait. You wait for Malcolm.
He's got things going on.
You wait for Malcolm.
He's a busy gentleman. Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, The Team Jack Podcast, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash with That Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and I keep forgetting to mention Fozzie and Tina. Fozzie Bear, formerly of The Podcast, has a new show. Check it out. He is very entertaining. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes for free. And if you like the show, we would love it if you would leave us a review. It helps other listeners find the program. You can stream the show on Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. As we mentioned before, please like our Facebook page. We post interesting, fun stuff there that sort of accentuates and enhances the listening experience.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, all one word. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com, although we're listed as a TV show. And you can always drop us a line with your top 10 list, any questions, comments, anything at all that you'd like us to know about at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. We will be not doing a show next week because we're going out of town for Dave's mom's memorial, but we will be back on October
14th.
14th. And we're going to talk about the Paperboy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Paperboy, and it's going to be great.
And is Atlas Shrugged Part 2?
Yep.
Oh, okay. You do not want to miss our show in 2 weeks where we talk about the Paperboy.
We're going to be so entertaining.
And Atlas Shrugged Part 2. It's going to be...
More entertaining than anything else that's ever entertained you.
It's going to be epic. So join us then. In the meantime, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.